The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
All right. Welcome to the Celtics Lab podcast brought to you by betonline.ag. It's Friday night. We are 24-ish hours removed from a big game one victory from the Boston Celtics in the NBA Finals. That feels good to say. I'm Cameron Tupdivai, your host. I'm with Dr. Justin Quinn, Alex of Divine Sweater. They have a gig this weekend, so Alex is off. But we welcome in friend of the podcast, the managing editor of the Warriors Wire, Mr. Tommy Call. Tommy, how are things in the Bay?
I mean, I'm still kind of processing what happened last night. It's still, even like you said, 24 hours away. It feels like a bit of a shock of what happened last night, because it's pretty crazy, and I'm excited to dive into it with you guys.
Yeah, I mean, certainly we wear green on our sleeve sometimes more times than others, but it was a great basketball game. I mean, for a playoffs that people have said is kind of whack, this game was not whack. This game had it all. So, we'll get into game one. We will talk about game two, and we will talk about all things NBA, Adam Silver, Draymond's podcast, and on and on and on. But first, I want to talk to you about our new friends over at Ticket IQ. They are offering $50 off all finals tickets if you head to Ticket IQ right now. Ticket IQ has no fees, meaning you'll save hundreds of dollars that you'd be paying elsewhere using sites like StubHub. If you use the promo code CelticsLab with a capital C, all one word, you get $50 off your Celtics tickets, $50. Importantly, this promo code can be used for other sporting events as well. So whether you want to catch a finals game, go see the Sox or the Giants, this is your chance. Head to Ticket IQ today. All right, Tommy, let's talk about game one. Didn't quite go so great for the Warriors, although there's a lot of takeaways that I'm sure are positive. Obviously, it started with just a historic Steph night, like a really fun Steph night. Then the game kind of became a little bit of a rock fight. And then, of course, the Celtics just exploded in the fourth quarter. So I'm going to do what we've been doing recently, which is, Tommy, I'm going to give you any member of the Celtics that you want to talk about. It could be Horford, Derek White, Brown, or Tatum, or Smart. And you could just tell us what you think about what you saw from them. So, Tommy, a Celtics player of your choice. Go.
I would be remiss to say Derek White, because I think he was kind of a little bit of a Warriors killer last night. He was the guy that, if you watch their defense, you watch the flow of that game, they were happy with him shooting those shots, and he was just drilling them. And a lot of those threes that came late were pretty open for guys like Al Horford. I mean, even Jaylen Brown got off a few open ones, but Derek White was like defended pretty decent on a lot. Like, he was pulling up over guys and letting it fly, and they were drilling Steph Curry-esque style three-pointers. And I mean, you guys watch Celtics a lot more than I do. That was a bit of a surprise. I know he's been shooting the ball pretty well during the playoffs, but to see him kind of having that type of trigger was definitely something that I kind of noted, like, all right, going into game two, guard this guy.
Or guard him a little closer anyways. Should we do the Draymond thing now, or do you want to save it?
Yeah, we can get into the Draymond thing. I don't know. I mean, obviously, covering the Warriors and living in the Bay Area, having guys like Draymond Green and Andre Iguodala having their own podcasts, getting their instant reaction from their mouths, not, you know, at pressers and things, has been really fun this season. There's been some big takes along the way, but just listen to Draymond's pod earlier today, him talking about the game. And one of the things he mentioned a lot was, you know, the three-pointers, and he is obviously the defensive captain, and people were asking him last night at the presser, you know, like, why were some of those threes so open? And it seemed like the way he talked about it, he was very satisfied to an extent with the guys that were shooting the three-pointers, right? Like, he, you know, to let Al Horford and Derek White and those guys beat the Warriors, that was kind of like their first option. Like, if they were going to let a guy beat them, it was that group from the Celtics, not take away Jason Tatum, take away Jaylen Brown, things like that, which kind of happened. I'm interested in talking about Tatum's night with you guys, but it was interesting to kind of hear his evaluation specifically of the game, specifically of the Celtics shooters, because that's the story for me, is the Warriors just gave up a ton of three-pointers, and the Celtics looked like the Warriors a little bit in that fourth quarter with the small ball, guys hitting timely shots.
Tommy, we lost you for a second. Well, Tommy regains connection. I'll just add, he's coming back. Yeah, Tommy, you are exactly right that it was by design that the Celtics were as open as they were. It was a historic night for the Seas. They went 21 of 41 from three. They hit 9 threes in the fourth quarter alone. So Draymond caught a lot of flack for what he said and how he said it, but I think he's technically right that this was by design. And if the Celtics are going to shoot 9 of 12 from three, you got to live with that, because that's the exception, not the rule. And on the other side of the ball, I think we saw something similar with Steph early on. Justin, you noted this, was that Steph was pulling up way further than the Celtics are used to guarding. So the way that they drop on defense and allow the guys to fight through screens usually works because people don't pull up as far back as Steph does. So both teams played their defense the way they'd like to play it. And Steph in the first and then the Celtics down the stretch just made them pay. But I think it really... I'd be surprised if it could happen again. It was so fantastic. Tommy, you still with us?
Yeah, I'm here.
Cool. Fantastic. All right. Sorry, Justin. No worries. Justin, I'm going to go to you. Pick a Celtics player that you want to talk about.
I want to talk about Jaylen Brown, just because that whole response would not have happened without him. And even though there were some moments where he was chasing after a ball getting poked out of his handle in this game, it was nothing like what we saw in the prior two series, which, as a sidebar, we can discuss or not, was so much more enjoyable. I think that is just a unanimous consensus all around that referees and flopping were not the topic of conversation after the game at all. Like, I mean, I hardly even thought about it. But with that, Jaylen Brown is uniquely positioned in this series to really be able to eat a lot better than he has probably since the Brooklyn series. And I'm really curious to see how they adapt, the Warriors adapt to him, particularly if he gets going with this mid-ranger that he was breaking out a little bit. Like, most of his points that really caught our attention were three-pointers, but like the mid-ranger that he was using, the little thing where he like hops up after like crouching down, that is something I think that could be super effective, particularly if they do try to like junk the game up a little bit more, which I don't think they're going to do in the next game. We can talk about that more, but I think for now, based on what we were talking about, what Tommy was talking about, this was more or less how they wanted to defend Boston's stars. And even still, Jaylen finding a way to will the Celtics back into the game and opening the door for Al Horford and Derek White in particular, I think really made this, shall we say, fairly unlikely outcome possible in the first place. I do agree. I don't think it's going to happen, but I also don't think that we're going to see, you know, Jason Tatum, for example, shoot, what was it, like 3 of 17 or something absurd like that. I really think that this was much more of like, let's see how this team plays. And we really kind of saw that in real time as the whole team was just utterly unready for Steph Curry in the first quarter. And we had that wonderful mic'd up coverage from Marcus Smart yelling at them to change how they were defending him.
So I'm going to take a turn, and you kind of set up how I was going to frame my little turn, which is hopefully I have a decade plus of talking about Jason Tatum's performance in the playoffs. So I got to talk about Al Horford, the birthday boy, because first of all, 26 points, the 6 threes. I mean, all of it was huge. But the defense was really important. excuse me, that connective tissue that kind of lets the Celtics do that drop defense, that switch heavy defense. It only works because Al Horford, I don't know if you talk to Tom Brady, or I don't know if you talk to Chris Paul, but like however you turn back the clock, it's miraculous. He and Rob Williams, even on one knee, the amount of floor that they covered, the amount of closeouts that they were able to execute. I mean, yes, Steph went nuts, but by and large, the way they played defense was radically important. So huge shout out to Al Horford. But on the topic, interesting, just because I have the box score in front of me, Jaylen Brown led the Celtics with rebounds. He had 7. Three other Celtics had 6 rebounds: Horford, Robert Williams, and wait for it, Peyton Pritchard. So the two teams ended up with 39 rebounds apiece. So it felt like there was disparity. And yes, Golden State was much better in the offensive class, but Horford and Pritchard and all sizes in between seemed to contribute, which was nice. All right, let's do the other side of the ball. Tommy, pick a Warriors player of your choosing. Talk about Steph, Dre, Clay, or really anyone else, wherever you want to go with it.
Yeah, it would be a softball to talk about stuff, but I do want to talk about Draymond. I kind of, in going back and forth with Justin before the series, just on our separate websites, I picked Draymond Green as an X factor in this series. I felt like the Celtics would kind of dare Draymond to be a scorer. A lot of teams tend to do that, but he's kind of like the defensive, like, I would say like the cracker, like the nutcracker, where he will take the defenses and kind of break them down. And there's a reason Steph Curry gets off those open jumpers.
I can't believe you called Draymond a nutcracker.
Oh, and I know.
He didn't miss a beat.
how he just kind of gets into defenses and can free up other guys, right? He's such a floor general for being a forward, and that kind of gets Steve Kerr's offense going. Specifically, he counts on him. That's why that motion offense has been so devastating for the last 6 years or whatever it's been. And last night was definitely a little bit of a different look because he took the bait. I mean, 12 shots for him. I meant to look it up before this, but seeing Draymond's box score numbers as 2 for 12, I'm like, when is the last time he's taking 12 shots in a game? It's we get on Draymond too much for not shooting the open shot. He was taking everything, whether it was drives, three pointers. Some of the threes were obviously like late in the shot clock where he kind of had to take it, but he took the bait, and he's such one of the smartest players I've ever watched in basketball. And it just, so for him to kind of succumb to the Celtics defense like he did last night, I'm obviously expecting bigger things from him because the defense is always going to be great. Last night, it wasn't great, which was another surprise. So just as like Jason Tatum, maybe he's not going to put up those type of, you know, low shooting numbers in the future. I would hope Draymond would play a little bit of a different game going into this series. I think the Warriors need him to kind of be the guy to get into that Celtics defense. And last night was just a little bit of a different look from him. I was surprised to see him just shooting as much, I guess.
Justin, Warriors player, go.
For me, I am going to take the softball pitch, but for probably a different reason than you might expect. And it's going to be relating how Steph played in this game to how the Celtics have been playing their opponents in kind of a hybrid but familiar form in each round of this playoffs. And what I'm saying by that is specifically related to the defense. They covered him very poorly in all the game ones of this series they've had so far. They've obviously not the first round, but since Brooklyn, they've had trouble adjusting to a new opponent, and they've taken some time to kind of like feel out the new coverages and see like how to react to them. And we saw that very vividly, obviously, in the first quarter. However, what we didn't see this time was such long periods being necessary to adjust to how the other team is playing. So in that, we are starting to see something that is like a garbage disposal of a defense, and that it just keeps grinding and grinding and grinding and grinding. And if you leave it in there long enough, there's just a shell of whatever you put in there to start with. And that is how they wore down KD. That is how they wore down Giannis. That is how they wore down Jimmy Butler. And that is, at least in this game, how they wore down Steph Curry, in my opinion. They let him go off, not intentionally. That was not part of the plan. Don't get me wrong on that, but little by little, they got better and better at covering him, tiring him out, making him move more. And in my mind, and I could be wrong about this, we're going to see obviously in game two, I think that what they are going to have to do to adjust, what I expect from Draymond in particular, but also from Steph, with other players, is adjusting to the Derek Whites and Al Horfords, particularly because they have been shooting better in these playoffs, like enough where you really do need to take them more seriously than they have. Like maybe they don't, you know, send doubles or anything like they're treating like Jalen Jason, apologize for those wonderful sound effects. My neighbor is very safe. Lost my train of thought. Okay, so what is going on here? I think what we're going to see in game two is they're going to need to cover more space. They're going to need to move around the floor more, and it's going to make them even more tired to prevent those kind of offensive outbursts, those open looks from three for these not, you know, lethal sharpshooters, but good enough three-point shooters where they do need to do a better job covering them. And I suspect that we're going to see a Golden State win in game two just because it's their own home floor. They have a, you know, an extra big chip on their shoulder now, but I think it's going to come at a very high cost in terms of energy. And I think it's going to continue to compound on a relatively older team that's going to force them into playing younger players who aren't so good.
Just kind of speaking to this, you know, the you know, term energy and how Steph was used in that game and wearing Steph down specifically. I think one of the big talking points here in the Bay Area, at least, and I think it's blended probably to your guys' coverage, but like how Steph was used specifically in the fourth quarter. Steve Kerr is very, very kind of regimented in how he brings Steph off the bench. Last night, he brought him off a little bit early to kind of weather that Celtics run, but it felt too late. It felt like you could see Boston heating up and you could see the Warriors getting ice cold. They needed Steph back in that game. Do you guys think they should have, like, I'm interested in your guys' perspective. Do you guys think they should have pulled the trigger on getting Steph out there a little bit earlier, playing the full fourth quarter when he's that
hot? I mean, personally, no. But, I mean, yeah, for you guys.
Well, so, yeah. My question there, so he played 38 minutes, which is not a huge number. But there was that moment later in the fourth where he kind of just non-contact pulled up with a pain in his ankle.
That weird little thing, like he dragged his toe, yeah, and like kind of turned his ankle.
So I'm wondering either he's a little more banged up than we know, or just that much playing time just like wasn't doable for him.
He has those braces.
He had the foot injury. He had the foot injury that happened against Boston. Yeah. He missed the final 12 games. There hasn't been much like in terms of like he's missing practice, missing any time. It's just, you know, I don't know, just your star player. Sometimes I feel like Steve Kerr gets a lot of criticism for years. It seems like this conversation has happened on tons of podcasts talking about the Warriors, whether it's in the finals or whatever the situation, on a loss in the regular season, this is discussed. But again, in the finals, and it felt like the easy decision would be to get him back out there. They brought him in 9:35, but I think it was a 12-point lead going in the fourth. At the time they brought him back in, it was already down to five, which is a lot. That number five feels a lot closer even than it sounds. You know, it felt like the tides were, the tides were turning. I think right after he pulled up though, he launched a three like the next possession. So it seemed like he was doing all right, but it's just, it was a, I don't know. It's an interesting discussion, and how Steve Kerr, I think, uses him is going to be under a magnifying glass in game two specifically, because it does feel like, you know, not a win or go home situation, but pretty close. You know, win is, it's a must win in every definition.
I'd be curious if Peyton Pritchard's extended playing time to open the fourth had anything to do with that. If Kerr saw that and thought his guys would be all right, or he wanted to rest Curry and for whatever reason match with Smart. I really don't know, but there was something similar going on with Boston that it worked out in Boston's favor. But if my texts that I got from friends were proof positive, people noticed that choice, at least in Boston. Mm. I'm going to say something really stupid. Maybe not. Maybe I'm right about this. I am not an athlete of any description, clearly a blog boy and a podcaster, but I was under the impression you're supposed to tighten your shoes like pretty good. And I can't imagine Steph Curry's shoe just popping off, like not even untied, just like popping off. I'm so shocked. But I'm so shocked that if you have an ankle injury that you don't, I might be right.
The braces on underneath them, so maybe that has something to do with it.
Maybe. I don't know. I'm playing immensely this summer. I don't know how to lace my shoes.
Right. I heard the Curry brand shoes just won some award for, I don't know, being really good basketball shoes. So take that for what it is.
I don't want to spill any tea, but I bought those Dunkin' Donuts shoes and they're kind of crappy. All right. Anyways, we've spent enough time on game one. Let's talk about game two. But first, let's pause the action to talk about our friends at betonline.ag. BetOnline continues to be the number one source for all your betting needs and sports info. You can find the latest odds, news, and sports developments. That includes this year's NBA Finals, the NHL Hockey Conference Finals, Major League Baseball scores, and all the latest fighting news even next season's early NFL futures are on betonline.ag. They are your continued source for all your sports wagering information for live betting, playoffs, esports, and more. Head to the website or use your mobile device today, and you'll receive a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Just use our promo code CLNS50 to get the bonus and get in on the action. Bet online, where the game starts. So we've kind of teased this, that the quite literally the ball is in the Warriors' court, but it's really their move to make. This isn't a must win, but it feels like a pretty big game Sunday night for the Warriors. So Tommy, has anything from game one changed how you view the series, or was it, I mean, there were a lot of really extenuating circumstances for that game. Are you ready to put that behind you?
Yeah, I mean, I think the Celtics defense is as advertised. I think the first quarter watching that go like, man, is the defense as good as people have been saying? But how they kind of adapted, you know, kudos to them massively. The defense just really showed up. They guarded Steph so well, I think, off ball. I think one of the reasons he looked tired and, quote, out of gas in that fourth quarter is because they just ran him ragged. Steph is so good moving without the ball, where he wears people down, like sprinting over multiple screens. We've all seen all the highlights. And, you know, the Celtics were just in his grill at every turn. And not only him, it was Klay Thompson, it was Jordan Poole. So I think, you know, how they break that down is going to be something, because the Warriors offense, I thought, was dramatically stagnant. Once Steph scored those 21 points in the first quarter, it was 1-on-5. It felt like sometimes, especially when the Celtics started getting hot, it was a lot of standing around. That's something Draymond talked about, something all the Warriors players talked about last night, Steve Kerr. So how they move without the ball, which is something they do so fantastic, I think is going to play a role. As other, you know, I think the highlight, one of the big takeaways is, you know, Tatum's poor shooting numbers. Well, Jordan Poole, who's been fantastic this entire season, I mean, just one of my favorite players to watch, one of the better stories for the Warriors, I think, has been obviously the rise of Jordan Poole. He was pretty bad last night. So how he rises to the occasion in game two, I think, is going to play a big factor. And then you got to also look at a guy like Klay Thompson too. So there's multiple things that he can go down a checklist of leading up to game two, and it's a lot on the Warriors to answer that, right? I don't think they were close to playing their best game in game one, and so it's going to be interesting seeing how they respond.
Justin, what about you? Did game one change how you view game two or the rest of the series?
Only very slightly, in that I predicted the series would go seven games in Boston's favor. Now I'm pretty sure it's going to go seven games in Boston's favor. I think there's still a very good chance the Warriors can win it. But, you know, before it was a little bit more, you know, wearing that green on the sleeve thing than it was necessarily feeling confident the Celtics can definitely win it in seven games. So I'm not convinced they can definitely win it, but I'm a lot closer than I was.
Yeah, I similarly thought the Celtics had the depth to win a longer series. But I think I've said on our podcast, I told our friends over at 95.7, in the Bay, that the Celtics are young and they get the yips, and the December, January Celtics, we saw them, these playoffs, the ghosts of the Celtics past shown up. And I thought for sure the Celtics would choke in some form or another in game one, that the stage would be too bright. And Tatum looked positively nervous. I mean, he looked like he couldn't catch his breath. He was so nervous. Maybe I'm wrong about this, but certainly the body language didn't look great. I thought Poole similarly
up with him. Yeah, no,
totally. Yeah, and I thought Poole similarly looked as well. He might, like, the stage was a little too big, and for that reason, I thought the Celtics A would lose game one, but B would always be on the back foot of trying to gain control of their own narrative, but second of all, the series and the resilience that they showed at the end of quarter three. I mean, after the Steph outburst, but then the end of quarter three into quarter four. That was something that we've seen from the Celtics, but the scar tissue is real. I don't trust that they are mature enough for the moment, but I was loud wrong about that in game one. So moving forward, I don't feel as worried about the Celtics. They could go and lay a big egg in game two and look like the 25 and 24 year olds that they are. But I expected them to do that. And I'm pretty happy to have been wrong about that.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Tommy, we teased this a little bit, but we're going to talk about adjustments for the Warriors and adjustments for the Celtics. You can take it in any order, but what adjustments do you expect to see or hope to see either from the Warriors and or the Celtics?
I mean, I'd hope to see from the Warriors' perspective, a flowing offense. One of the things, you know, they move so well. There is guys running open, and we talked about that with what Draymond does to how well Steph moves off the ball. That all needs to play a factor, I think, for them to get back into this series. I think one of the big reasons game one's loss was not only so bad because of the comeback, but just because they just didn't necessarily look like themselves in terms of some guys, you know, maybe being too big for the moment for, or just looking bad overall, like Klay Thompson's performance and things like that. But I'd hope that is a big adjustment. I hope we see a little bit more involvement from other playmakers, specifically Jordan Poole. The Warriors, flat out would not be in this situation without him. And without him in game one, they lost. You know, it was not his best game. And he's not a great defender at this stage in his career. He's still 22 years old. But he makes up for that by being so dynamic offensively, whether it's getting to the bucket or shooting from deep. So I would love to see him just be more active, maybe get him in. I want to see that really small lineup that they've had a lot of success with at times, with where it's the three guards, Draymond and Wiggins. I would like to see that maybe a little bit earlier, just to instill some confidence in Jordan Poole. He's such a player that when he is on, he has that trigger like Steph and Klay. It's seconds to get him going. So I would love to see Steve Kerr just kind of instill that with him, just because he didn't have because he had a bad game one, don't go to Andre earlier or Gary Payton the second or something like that to try to switch it up. I would like to stick with the same thing that got them there, and that is Jordan Poole.
I'm going to use this moment. I think that the new death lineup should be called Poole in the Gang. But it sounds like Poole Party is the one that
that's been one of the biggest like storylines, questions, any interview, any Bay Area radio you listen to, they lead off with what should the nickname of that lineup be. And it's just,
well, you should tell them that it should be Poole in the Gang. Tommy, any changes for the Celtics? Or I mean, the proof is in the pudding.
So yeah, I mean, obviously I think it's easy to talk about Tatum, but I don't know about you guys. I'm honestly interested in hearing what you say. I thought he was pretty awesome as a playmaker. Like what the Warriors defense gave him, he took. I mean, he got that offense fired up. He was a big reason that these guys like Horford and Peyton Pritchard were getting such open looks. I thought he was, I wouldn't consider that a bad game by him. Like, I understand maybe the scoring wasn't there, but I don't think he played bad. I don't think that needs to be the headline from this. I thought he was pretty awesome specifically as a playmaker, but I would like to see, I'm interested in see how he approaches that as a scoring. Is he going to continue this and they're going to rely heavily on Al Horford and these guys drilling three-pointers? That's the thing that's going to be like, when is the Tatum breakout going to happen? Because it's going to happen. He's going to have a big game. Is it game two and they take a 2-0 lead? That's what I'm going to be watching for.
Justin, do you, well, I have thoughts on Tatum, but you can go because it's technically your turn.
Okay. I don't think we're going to see very big adjustments from Boston. I think we will see no Daniel Tice. I think we will see a lot less Grant Williams. I think we will see more Peyton Pritchard. I think they can get away with playing him. I'm pretty happy that I called that on prior podcasts. I don't really see any major changes to how they play so much as who they play with. Just downsizing really is the main thing, I think, because that's what really got them going in the fourth quarter. Playing Al at the five. I do think that we will see some preemptive countering, that when Boston does go small, they're going to use Looney to punish him, Kevon Looney to punish them on the boards a lot more as a result, and see how that goes. Also, particularly if they do what Tommy suggested in terms of playing Poole more and it doesn't go well. but either of those things can happen, you know, for the same different reasons. I'm a little concerned that when they do start respecting the Celtics auxiliary shooters, that Boston is going to find things very difficult. I don't know if they will have the energy, as I was saying before, to go off quite as they did in the first quarter, but I think they're going to find throughout the course of the game, if they pace themselves more and if they focus, you know, not the same, anywhere near the kind of coverage we're seeing for Jalen and Jason, but just a little bit more respect, I think that it's going to be a lot closer of a game in game two. And I don't think, I could be wrong. You know, we did see Udoka adapt very quickly in this game, much faster than he has really until near the end of the Miami series in terms of in-game adjustments. I don't necessarily expect Boston to have an answer to something like that just yet. Maybe they will. But like I said, I think that the momentum and, shall we say, pride of losing on their home floor for the first time in that building is going to be something that they answer very strongly with.
Yeah, I could go in either direction for the Dubs. I think by some measure, they should really get out and run. They took 25 field goals in that first quarter. And I think that that's a way to kind of subvert Boston's defense, is to get out and run. Now, that demands that Clay and to a lesser extent, Steph have the legs for four quarters of that. That pool is available. And we haven't, I don't think anyone said the name Wiggins yet, but that Wiggins can figure that out too. Easier said than done. So by some measure, I think that the Warriors just get out and run and see what that looks like. But Justin, you alluded to something that I was thinking, which is Kevon Looney is not going to light it up in the box score, but he looked really good out there. And if the Celtics are able to kind of grind the game to a halt, I think the Warriors have to go big with respect to Poole and perhaps with respect to Wiggins. I mean, Porter and Looney might just be a little bit older, a little more ready for the moment, but also tougher and more physically able to play half court defense. So if Boston wants a rock fight and the Warriors can't upend that, I think picking up a rock and going to that sooner rather than later might make sense for them. For the Celtics, Tommy, you alluded to this. Tatum only had, I think, 7 field free throws for the game. I think 3 of which were in the first quarter. If there is an adjustment to be made, it's really, I think Tatum could get to the straight more. Easier said than done against defensive players like Draymond and whatnot, and I'm not advocating for more whistles in an NBA finals game, but I do think that if Tatum can't find a shot, getting to the free throw line would be a smarter move. That, again, he couldn't find a shot, and so he went ahead and got 13 assists instead. But
there's no Giannis waiting for him there. He's really got to try to get to the paint a little bit harder than he had.
Right. So go ahead and get 13 assists, but maybe get 13 free throws as well. Tommy, back to you. Give us a quick prediction for game two. And while you're on the subject, the next two games after that will be in Boston. How do you see things shaking out when the series switches back to Beantown?
Yeah, I mean, I do think that the side of me always just goes like, I don't know. That was a funky performance. And especially how they ended that fourth quarter, I hope it doesn't bleed into game two. Sometimes those things transfer over in these playoff series, how they shot the ball late there and just how they looked overall. But I do think they come out with something to prove for the first time, probably in this playoff run. They haven't trailed in a series. They haven't lost a game at home. So all those things are going to be first for them. How they respond with this unit is going to be interesting. And I think it's going to probably lead to a victory. Although I think the Celtics have a little bit of swagger. You know, that was they punched the Warriors in the mouth on their home floor. And I think heading into that game, and especially how they found their footing defensively late, was impressive. And so I do think it's going to be a battle. I don't think that the Warriors in any way are going to cruise to some form of a blowout. But I do think that they end up winning, because you're going to have some bounce back performances from hopefully Klay Thompson, Draymond Green. I'm very excited to see how the Warriors play in Boston. I've actually been looking forward to that for this series, because they've played fairly well on the road throughout the playoffs, but they haven't had to go to a place like Boston yet this playoff streak. They've cruised, I feel like, for the most part through the playoffs. So now having to win back home the home court advantage. Like, they need to win a game there. And throughout their playoffs, throughout the entire time, you know, this Steph, Draymond, Clay run, they've always played really well on the road, especially in the finals, in Cleveland, things like that. They've kind of shown out. Toronto, a little bit of a different story, but they've gone and shown that they can win specifically in the finals on the road. So it's that now they have to. Now the situation's fully on them. But how that defense looks in Boston on their home floor is just a different beast.
All right. Justin, same question.
So I want to say that the Celtics are going to win both games on their own home floor. I've already said what I think is going to happen in game two. But if I'm being realistic, at least one of those two, well, three games, the Achilles heel of this team, it's youth and inexperience and tendency to take the foot off the gas just a little bit when they're up is something I'm concerned about. I think that's going to happen in game two. It might happen in another one of those games. In Boston, it's probably more likely than not that we go back to the Bay with the series tied. So I'm predicting, you know, a 7-game series. I think we're going to end up getting there, you know, three games. It's not going to be a blowout for those of our fan base who are very excited and saying, you know, Celtics in five, or, you know, I'm even like, I could see a 6-game series if they do win both of their games at home. But for now, I'm still sticking to the 7-game series. So.
Yeah. I mean, if you watch just the first and the third quarter, you would think that it's Warriors in five. And if you watch just the second and fourth quarter, you think it's Celtics in five. So the law of averages, it's probably going to be a longer series. I do think I would have talked a big game that the Celtics were going to lose game one and it wasn't going to be close. And I was happy to be wrong about that. So I don't know what's going to happen in game two, quite frankly. Let's do this. I got one more question about the series and then we just have some NBA news and whatnot. Tommy, I'll go to you first. Did game one change who you would, who you think might win finals MVP? So I don't know who you had going into the series, but has that changed at all? And do you think anyone, by the way, took themselves out of the running?
Not exactly, because I would probably think the two front runners would get it, whether that's Tatum or Steph, however the series went. Steph looked like he was gunning for the MVP finals. Yeah. That's been such a big discussion around his legacy at this point. And so it looked like he was going for it with how he was shooting the ball early. I don't chalk that up as a bad game for Tatum. I thought he was pretty good, just in a different way. I thought just what made the Celtics so good in game one was the trio of role players, whatever you want to call them, that were hitting the long ball. And, you know, I don't put Al Horford as the MVP finals favorite at this point. So I still stick with probably the two main guys, and probably Steph's knocking on the door if they get a win here in game two.
Justin?
I actually, like most of us, thought it would more than likely be Curry or Tatum as well. And the only thing that this has really changed for me is, you know, Horford always seemed like kind of like a dark horse, particularly if kind of the judgment of his play in this series bleeds into past series and what he has done to keep the Celtics afloat through them. But now I think there's actually a reasonable chance that Jaylen Brown could end up winning, yep, particularly if he keeps playing the way he has.
I was going to say, Jason and Steph, you could call it a wash. They had good game ones, but not MVP level game ones. But Jaylen Brown he was not an all-star this year, but he is an all-star. It's worth pointing out that Al Horford had more points than Jaylen Brown, but Jaylen Brown obviously came up huge. He had 10 points in the fourth quarter. Al Horford had 11. So either one feels like a fun pick, but it's a star-driven league. So with respect to Ruffles and Cars.com and all of those people, I bet it's going to be one of the biggest stars, but I feel pretty good about the possibility of Al Horford sneaking in there. But it would probably, I think the Celtics would have to win the series for Al Horford to be MVP. I think there's a world where the other way around, if the Warriors win, Tatum could win it if he gets big, or vice versa. Okay, let's do a little bit of news and then
talking about the Jerry West. My goodness.
Yeah. He might sue the league if not. Tommy Call, we'll get you out of here after a little bit of news. First, Van Gundy, Breen, Cameron, all out with COVID. So first of all, if I am an NBA player playing in the NBA finals, I am not leaving my hotel room because there's a lot of COVID in the Bay. There's a lot of COVID in Boston, and that would be very disruptive. But also, listeners, make good choices. Be safe. Good luck. And if you're watching on YouTube, that's why I've been coughing every 30 seconds. Let's do some injury updates, and I'm going to lean on you two as the beat reporters. Justin Kukoc, an update on Rob, if there is one, and Tommy, vice versa, for Peyton or anyone else.
It's just the same thing with Rob. He's going to experience swelling with the kind of exertion that he's dealing with in these games, and it's not going to go away for the rest of the series, at least. I think he needs an extended period of rest for the swelling and the pain to go away completely from the operation. But we have seen he can be fairly bouncy and vaguely functional, even on one leg, which is, you know, kind of important. And, you know, Marcus looked great. He was really the only other person besides Sam Hauser who had what they were calling a shoulder instability episode. And not like I expect him to see the floor in the series anyway. If he is, there's a big problem. So in terms of health, I think things are going really, really well. The additional days between games, I think, are going to be really, really important to the Celtics. Possibly also you guys, because we have not been talking about a particular, we saw all the injured players return in game one to save one. I suppose I should cede the floor to Tommy for that.
Yeah, I thought, you know, how quick of a trigger Steve Kerr had to throw Andre Iguodala right back out there after not playing since round one and not playing a ton during the regular season was a pretty big, like, stamp that he's feeling healthy. They played 12 minutes, so nothing crazy. Steve Kerr and the rest of the Warriors players love Andre Iguodala. I think he's going to make his mark on the series at some point. Seeing him 12 minutes right away, early in the rotation, early minutes, I think he made an appearance in the first quarter. And then, like we kind of sprinkled in here, Otto Porter obviously played a little bit of a factor, who's been banged up. But then the guy on like the tip of everybody's tongue is Gary Payton II. I don't know if it was a rotational thing to an extent of why, or the injury. I think it's a mixture of both, because those three guys are the Warriors, you know, 7, 8, 9 off the bench, whatever you want to call them. They've all been hurt at a different point during the postseason. So this was the first game they've really had all of those guys available. And then, so is Steve Kerr, one of the big questions to me, and I think I talked about this with Justin, is how quick was he going to, how short was that rotation going to be, you know, in the finals, we know specifically. So it's still going to be interesting to see if GP2 can make his say in this series, but we haven't seen it yet. And game two, it's kind of a mystery at this point specifically, but it looked like the other two vets are on track to be a big part of this series.
I think there's any chance. I'm sorry. I just want to ask this question. Do you think there's any chance that they bring him back in place of one of the other low shooting or no shooting players in the rotation, just to try to give a different look at things? Because I don't think they're going to throw him right into the teeth of the Celtics in this series. I think he's going to get eased back in pretty slowly. But I mean, like, how do you think they're going to use him if they do bring him back?
I think they're going to use him similarly to how they've worked him in specifically during the playoffs, but as kind of the primary, you know, wing defender. Andrew Wiggins has had a big say with how he guarded Luka. GP2 wasn't available, but he was the guy they put on Morant early against Memphis. And he was kind of, has been known as like the stopper in a way to certain guards. Well, we didn't really get to see the Celtics wings get fiery until it was Derek White, Jaylen Brown late in the game. And I don't think they were going to just throw Gary Payton on him early. I think Steve Kerr was seeing how far he could get away with not using him. And then Gary Payton is fantastic defensively, but throughout the season, and you guys have probably seen it on the highlights, this guy is just such a spark offensively with just a big dunk or a timely three-pointer. And yeah, he's probably not providing a ton of value offensively, but they could have used him in that game, whether it's just providing some form of a spark. And I thought it would be. So I think the minute that Steve Kerr feels comfortable putting him in, kind of in the teeth, like you said, they're going to see him just because he's just, and on, you know, the fan of basketball in me, he's just been such a fantastic story for where he started and where he is now with the Warriors specifically. So I want to see him out there. And I think Steve Kerr will go to him, especially if the defense for the Warriors wavers like it did in the second half there.
So it's Friday evening. We'll leave it there in terms of injury updates, because by the time you listen to this, listener, things might have changed. But Tommy, I'm inclined to agree. I mean, Gary Payton, at least his dunk package was one of the highlights of the season, no pun intended. Tommy Call, you were the managing editor of Warriors Wire, and I have one last question for you. So before game, as he often does, or always does, I suppose, the commissioner, Adam Silver, spoke to the media. And I'm going to give you a couple of the hits, and then I want to ask you what you would do as commissioner. So he hinted that the midseason tournament might be a little further out, might need a little more time to organize, this idea that halfway through there'd be like $1 million and a trophy on the line to do a little tournament. He also said that expansion is not imminent, citing a talent depth, which I actually agree with, which we could talk about in the offseason. And then he also hinted at, which has been talked about a lot, that the season could get shortened. So assuming that they're all wonderful, equally good ideas, Tommy, if you were commissioner and you could pick one of these things to implement, let's say in two seasons, so logistically it's not a problem, what would you pick? The midseason tournament, an expansion, or shortening the season?
I think the clear winners is shortening the season. And just because one thing we've seen impact the game we love, the NBA overall, is injuries, unfortunately. And I don't think with all the money on the line and just the advertising, there should be back-to-backs. I mean, these guys play at such a high level with what they do to their bodies. And us as fans or media or whatever you want to call it, sit there and just be like, these guys should be out there every single night. And it's like, that's just not as realistic to say as it once was. And it's, the product is suffering because of it, because we want to see our stars out there. And it just is such a better, it's fun to watch, right? And so if there was a outlet where you could give these guys a little bit more rest and make the games, you know, so you can't punt on a game and sit everybody and send them back home if it's the final game of road trip type of thing, and where every games matter a little bit more during the regular season, I just think it would be, you know, such a better product, and hopefully more importantly than all that is just cut down on injuries.
Well said. Justin, quickly, you're not the star of the show here, but I'm curious your thoughts.
Well, if it involved getting a franchise in Mexico City, I think we know what my answer to that would be. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't seem to be in the cards at all anytime soon, so I have to agree wholeheartedly with Tommy. In fact, I also think that by shortening the regular season, you can make for a select number of teams, particularly if it's voluntary, if there is some kind of incentive. I am still not convinced that money alone is going to be enough to make this tournament work. I think maybe a draft pick or something that can both benefit the players and the team to have everybody in the organization on board. I don't think it's enough to just have the players or just to have the front office on board. So long story short, I think that everything that Tommy said is exactly right. There are too many games. The eventness of games themselves, with sometimes as many as 5 in a week, which is absurd. And even 4 is too many. Like 3 should be the maximum number of games in a week. I think like something like a 62 to 72 game season, depending on how they did a tournament, would be the way to go. And if we're being completely honest, of all the things that he talked about in his pre-final speech, I think that is by far the most likely to happen.
I sort of agree, but then also the NFL spent a decade defending itself against concussions, and then they were like, but also here's a 17th week that no one wants. So I can't imagine, that's just lighting money on fire. If anything, they're going to go 100 games. So on that happy note, Tommy Call, you write for, or you manage Warriors Wire. You can find Tommy at Tommy_III, Tommy III on Twitter. Tommy, thanks for stopping by. And
Thank you.
Hopefully it's a long series, and may the best team win.
Yeah, it was a blast. Thank you, guys. I appreciate you having me on.
Sure.
Yeah, man.
Likewise. Thanks, everyone. We will catch you soon.
You want the best for your child. K-12 can help them gain the skills they need to reach their full potential while giving you the support you need to get them there. K-12 powered schools are tuition-free accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. Their state-certified teachers make online learning interactive and engaging, allowing your child to learn at their pace from the safety of home. Join the more than 2 million families who have chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast today to learn more. That's k12.com/podcast.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.